We're Ricky and Dale Jampkard. Our subject today is on the woman-man relationship in the 1980s. We opened it up a little beyond just marriage in the 1980s, although we're going to deal with some of the same kind of skills as we would have had in the other one.
First, I want to just take an overview as to where we are in terms of marriage today, because there's some changes that I think place marriage in a position of having to adapt to a whole new set of expectations. The first thing is that marriage is accepted, marriage is popular today. It's not that it's not popular, because although many people get divorced, they turn right around and get married again. So it's not as though people aren't getting married. However, the option of divorce and of single life is becoming increasingly accepted. In the past, if you weren't married, someone really, or people, the society, thought there was something wrong with you, or wondered why you weren't married. Today I hear people saying, I'm choosing not to be married, because there's some advantages to being married and to not being married. And as I talk to a lot of young people and single people, some are saying, no, marriage just doesn't fit my life right now. Maybe sometime later I'll get married, but not now. Also, in terms of having children, I hear both single people and couples talking about children don't fit for me right now, or maybe I don't want to have children. My husband and I are, I'm thinking of a couple now, they're saying, my husband and I have a number of things we want to do in our life, and we may choose not to have children. And that seems to be an acceptable option. Again, where in the past it was assumed that one of the major purposes of marriage was to have children, and therefore it was assumed that people would have children once they got married. So we are today, I believe, moving into marriage with much more intentionality. We're getting married because we want to be married. As people enter into marriage, they are doing it in ways that, at least in the near past, weren't common. And that is, people are living together, they're trying various ways of being together. It may mean sharing living quarters, sometimes it means sexual activity before marriage, sometimes it means sharing finances, and all of this before they consider themselves married. And then after they've tried living together and checked each other out in various ways, then they're saying, okay, now we're ready and are ready to be married. Again, that's quite different than a number of years ago, for the most part, where we chose a person and decided to get married, and it was a very definite step. It's not that some of these things didn't happen, but they weren't accepted by society. The once people become married, they're faced with some different challenges also. And that is, in the past, once we got married, we decided who did what by our roles in life. We knew that men did this and women did this, and so when you got married, Ricky assumed, you know, I'm going to do certain things, mow the lawn, change the oil, take out the garbage, so forth. And I assumed she was going to do the cooking. And, you know, I wasn't too sure, because she didn't feed me much while we were dating. And I kept wondering why.
And I got 8 cookbooks for Charlotte's.
Yes. And I began to wonder why her friends felt the need to give her cookbooks. But I just trusted. And I'm finding now in our marriage, you know, that she is a realtor. Whoever gets home first often starts the meal. And that I have cooking responsibilities, for which I'm ill-equipped, by the way. I have a lot to learn about cooking.
I've got 8 cookbooks you could look through.
And I do things much more by feel than by reading. So often the family becomes victims as I try to cook a meal. Well, as a result of this, decisions were made by roles in the past. And there didn't seem to be the need for a lot of negotiating. It's who should do this according to the attitudes. Well, there was some need, but today what we're finding is that people need to negotiate who's going to do what right from the word go. Who's going to work when? Who's going to take care of the house? Who's going to do this? Who's going to plan the social events? Everything needs to be negotiated and decided upon. And that's calling for skills that often were not modeled in our homes. Often, I know I didn't see my parents negotiate things, hammer out things much. They had just a way of, you know, this is it. This is how it's going to happen. This is who's going to do it. And I didn't hear them really talk things out or even argue things out or even raise their voice at any point. So that a lot of times we haven't learned negotiating skills, ways of working out, and we get into trouble because of that. The demands on marriage in the past again coming out of the rural life and out of the demands where the man worked outside the home, usually the woman worked in the home, and there was a balance. A lot of the homemaking needs were met because the woman was expected to take care of them. One of the things I think we're facing now as women move outside of the home is a lot of the homemaking needs get overlooked. And we have to decide who's going to invite people over for a social evening. Whereas when Ricky was home, I'd often say, hey, let's have so-and-so over, and I assume she would call them. But we have to decide how we're going to meet our social needs and who's going to do the social planning, who's going to get ready for the party. But a lot of these things were taken care of. A lot of the nurturing kinds of things. Who's going to make things comfortable? Who's going to make things nice? Were again assumed to be the wife's role. So some of the tasks of homemaking, I think, are becoming a secondary priority, and that we tend, without some intention, we tend to neglect taking care of our social and emotional needs. I hear a lot of people saying we don't entertain much anymore. We don't do a lot with other people in our homes. We go out some, but this kind of meeting each other and caring for each other is not done. There's a another dimension that I think has come along with the women's movement and has been talked of in one way as the woman's right to orgasm. And that is that there have, I believe, grown expectations about having one's needs met in terms of intimacy, in terms of sharing, in terms of fun, in terms of closeness. In the past, I think the needs for emotional closeness, caring, this kind of thing, were met along with the other things that went on in the home. That as the family worked together on a lot of things, that more time was spent focused in the home. And that along with the tasks came these other emotional needs being met, kind of the gravy. Today, with both husband and wife moving out and taking on responsibilities out in the world, you know, most of the functions take place outside of our home. Most of our social functions take place outside, our work life, educational life for our kids. The home is just a crossroads where we happen to meet. And so there's a lot of things that we're not doing together that we used to do together. As a result of that, I think what happens is that when we come home, each comes home from a draining day out in the world, we come home with emotional needs. And we say, hey, meet my need. And the other one says, hey, meet my need. And we're both grasping to have our needs met at that point. And there's not an activity at that point that we have to do where the needs could be met by doing something often together. And so we end up kind of feeling like we're grasping to have needs met and they're not getting met. And I hear people then coming in and talking about this in counseling. Somehow with my spouse, it just isn't satisfying, or isn't fun, or I'm not sure I love him anymore, or I'm not sure he loves me, or she loves me. And again, I think this area is an area where, again, we haven't developed the skills that, nor, and part of it now is increased expectation, lack of sometimes automatic happening because we don't do as much together, and then not having the skills often to be intimate with each other, to be caring in a very responsive interaction way. And so because of the higher expectation, we end up feeling like we're not getting our needs met. And that's often a complaint that I have from couples that come in for counseling, is that my emotional needs, my caring, our time together just doesn't seem to be satisfied. And that's where then when the third party enters in, all of a sudden the person meets someone else and who has the time, or even if it's a short time, all of a sudden some of those needs are met. The person just says, wow, you know, isn't that great? That's what I've been looking for and not getting. And often then it's makes very difficult decisions to decide, I want to stay with a marriage where I feel like I'm not getting this, rather than go with another kind of relationship that seems so satisfying. And of course, what often people discover is that when they move to that other relationship and get married sometimes, then the very nature of marriage itself makes the meeting of those needs more difficult also. So, there are three areas I just want to lift up out of what I've been saying. One is an understanding of marriage and when a person is married and how a person knows one is married.
What that means. Not from a legal position.
Yes.
But just in terms of a
and
commitment.
Secondly, the negotiating, the first one that I would call the affirming skills, affirming of each other and affirming of negotiation. The second are the negotiating skills, being able to work out who's going to do what in a way, you know, without ending up in a fight every time. And the third one is the whole area of intimacy and companionship and caring. How to be responsive to each other, how to tune into each other's needs, how to let oneself get close. And
how to continually discover one another. It's really easy when you first are acquainted, when you first start going together, when you first are engaged. You are constantly discovering one another, new things about it. That's a tremendous amount of excitement and a tremendous amount of, often can be, let's qualify that some. And then, you know, 3 years down the line, people say, you know, I know what he thinks about that, and I know what she thinks about that. And we all change. I don't think Dale would have married, today, would not marry the me he married 24 years ago. And I I probably wouldn't marry you. You were 24 years ago either.
Go ahead. We have changed.
We have grown. And it's been a constant process of rediscovering one another. And sometimes we go on for a long time and then assume that we know. And then we have some time, take some time together and say, oh, that's what's going on for you. You know, that's where you really are today. And we change and we evolve in the same way your garden changes and your garden evolves from season to season. So you can't assume, as people I think had a tendency to do before, that, hey, you get married and that's it, and then you learn all about them and that's the way it goes, and they're always the same. We aren't. Our world is changing too fast outside for us to remain the same, because we're always encountering our environment changing because of it.
Okay, how does this fit your perception of what's happening to marriage? Any comments or observations you want to make?
I felt everything you said fit it. Just the way I've observed myself. And the biggest thing is when you come home drained and having those emotional needs. I felt that just with my family. And you're always thinking of your own, and you don't really look at them knowing they've got some too until they blow up, or until there's that remark or the stomping out, or, you know, it'll come to a climax and you think, oh yeah, they've got some feelings too.
Mm-hmm.
Observations, a lot of the change that you're talking about can't even be handled with a communication. And I don't know what the answer is there. Tough it out or what. But I think the communication of the change is a scary thing, because I think that there's some danger that change is already recognized, but it's too big a change. In other words, the parties have changed, have gone by each other. And that's an observation. It may not be valid, but it's an observation, and I don't know where that gets us. Or
no, I think you're putting your finger on a very important point. And that is that there's a lot of emphasis today on individual growth and development for both husband and wife. Whereas, again, people didn't think so much of growing and changing in the past, but today there's so much emphasis on learning and growing, developing new skills and so forth, new sense of self-image and so forth. Well, what happens is that as people often grow in spurts, and so one person grows and changes and the other one doesn't at the same rate, and all of a sudden, they have the feeling like we're not, you know, our relationship doesn't fit who we are. But as you say, they're often afraid to deal with it, because if they surface it, it may blow up on them.
Makes it obvious, even more obvious.
And I think a lot of couples today are really hanging on with people getting divorced all around them. And often it's the people they think, oh, they'd never get divorced, they've got a great marriage, and boom, there it goes. And you know, wow. You know, when's that going to happen to me? And sure, I think couples are pretty anxious today about maybe not daring to look too close at their own marriage for fear they'd find the same cracks and weaknesses.
I wonder how much expectation for fulfillment is involved in marriage today. I find in counseling pastorally with people getting married, we just went through the heavy season, that they're incredibly, you know, the Maslow's expectations, you know, the hierarchy of values will both be get a nice paycheck and get in the condo. And, you know, really unreal expectations. That my grandma and grandpa in Nebraska, basically, grandpa raised the hogs and the cattle, and grandma had to raise the children. I'm not sure they had a lot of self-actualization when they celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. They were very tired Germans and worn out.
They were glad to have survived.
Yeah, but there's a incredibly unreal expectations. We, I think Con and I could say what you did, we're 22 years into mm-hmm. this, and, you know, in this wild, wild river journey. Mm-hmm. But are there expectations that you would, I sense that there are just many people come and we spend, I try to spend a lot of time talking about expectations from day one and sort of at least suggesting that some of this is fantasy or at least has to be asked and worked through a little bit before one gets into the altar itself, mm-hmm. at least in church sense or Christian sense.
One that I know a lot of couples are bumping up against too is they assume that they're going to own a home. And for many today, it's going to be very difficult for them to own a home.
And I'm from an area where about half of them don't assume that, and they have a real sense of sadness that they aren't going to be able to own a home as their parents did. They can't have children without thinking seriously about just sheer economy. The economy makes a great deal of difference. And in the end, it sort of casts a shadow already on some assumptions. Then you don't give gifts that would have to do with your own kitchen, perhaps, including 8 cookbooks.
Yeah. Yeah.
When is a person married?
Public vow.
I'd say it's when they make a commitment to each other. And doesn't necessarily have to be public.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask, do we expect till death us do part, or do we just play pastoral words with that? I like to get answers maybe from people without gray beards.
Yeah, what's the image of marriage today?
Yeah, you know, do we really say till death us do part, or do we just patronize
the old
pastor?
Is that considered unrealistic to say that?
You know, in terms of, when you say commitment, were you thinking lifetime?
Yeah, for me, personally, yes.
Mm-hmm. My husband and I have just been married now quite a year, and being both young when we were married, we thought a lot about that, you know, thinking you're going to be my partner for life, you know, and as Christians, that's a commitment that we've chosen, so.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's commonly the way people enter into marriage now?
I've only had one couple say, I didn't marry them for that reason, you know, but say, we don't know how long this is going to be. We've both been married before, and who knows how long it's going to be this time, and we don't want to put that kind of stuff in, faithful, you know. Well, I have a hard time with that.
I was just
going to
say,
at least that's the only time that's ever been verbalized.
I think on a first marriage, that's the goal is for life. And then when they start finding that things maybe aren't the way that they expected and feel a little rocky or whatever and get out of it, maybe the second marriage, their expectations may be a little different. I'm just thinking of my husband's two sisters who have both been married 3 times. And the older one, the second time she was getting married, she said before she got married, well, if this stuff doesn't work, I'll bag it. And I wondered then if the fact that she's gone through divorce, she survived that, she could go through another divorce and survive that, and she did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now she's in a situation that maybe looks a little better, but maybe finding out that it's not so hard to get divorced once she, you know, I've got a lot of pride involved and everybody goes through difficult times. And part of that is maybe just sticking out and saying, well, you know, I'll be able to just know
that. As difficult as it must be.
Yeah.
Not really
all
that.
Yeah, what, you know, if people enter into marriage with the idea that I'm going to be married as long as it feels like it's working well for me, in a sense, they have to decide every morning whether they're married. And can you imagine having to make that decision? There are some mornings when I don't want to be married. And, you know, that there are always those down days that we experience. And so I think for some to come to an awareness that to be married is to decide that you are married, that there is an I, or there's a you and a me and an us. And to have a sense of affirming that it's a drawing a circle, and I'm going to include you in my life, I'm going to share my life with you. And no matter how you grow and change and how I grow and change, there has to be a way that we can somehow share life. And to begin to have some of that kind of image of marriage that keeps the circle that it includes the you and the me and the us. Yeah.
I think for me and for a lot of the people that I know, like this lady said, it's a goal. I don't know many people that say, well, if it doesn't work, I'll beg it. I don't know many people that wish that upon themselves. But I know a lot of people who say, if I look at it realistically, I know that that's a thing that might happen to me. It's a possibility. It's not what I want. Mm-hmm. Looking at it like, well, what if this person goes crazy and I can't let, you know, I wouldn't be able to live with this person. I wouldn't, you know. I guess most of the people I know, and the way I think is that it's an option that might happen there. It's not a very pleasant one to look at, but trying to look at it with that realism.
From your perspective as a counselor, do you see a difference in that perspective or that expectation between the men and the women? I frankly get very angry at the men, and I'm on both sides of these. But, and it may not be valid because I have no statistics to back it up. It's just a gut reaction.
Let's identify you, Les. You're an attorney, and you handle a lot of domestic relations.
Like yeah, I have a gut reaction that the women have that expectation more than the men, at least.
Which expectation?
That the marriage is going to be long-term. And I'm just wondering if you have a feel for that, or if that's totally out in the field. And I'm wondering if that is true, or if that has had any validity at all, if it's maybe a result of how the men and the women are brought up as far as their roles later on.
Yeah, I don't know how to. I don't have a broad enough sampling to say a pattern, and I certainly find both men and women talking the same way. Some approaching marriage very tentatively. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, that'll have to be it. And both men and women being very committed to the whole idea of being married and sharing life, no matter what comes. So I wouldn't venture at this point a judgment on that. I'd like to throw in some experiential things as we do this. I'd like to have you close your eyes for a moment. And I'd like to have you have an image of your spouse or your fiancé or companion, or if none of those, maybe just a close friend, wherever you're at. And when you image that person, what do you think of as you think of them? Just answer to inside yourself. What comes to mind as you image the person? Okay, and now as you image that person again in your mind, would you begin to look at that person as a unique human being? No one else like that person in all the course of human history. Would you begin to see that person as a gift of God, of infinite worth, would you have a sense of what it would mean to affirm and to love and to accept that person just the way they are? If they never made the changes that you wish they would make, would you begin to see that that person as they are is a creation of infinite mystery, that you can spend a lifetime getting to know that person and knowing the richness of life that can be known in and through that person? Okay, and now open your eyes. What happened for you as you did this? What did you notice? Mm-hmm. Was there a change in how you saw the person?
Physically, as
well. Or any other way.
Mm-hmm. Just a closer.
You said there's no other person like that person in the world. I thought there are days when I'd say, thank heavens, I can't handle two.
I think the expectations tend to drop away, and I can be more of a giving person rather than thinking that that person has to meet my needs or that person giving to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we often begin to look at a person in terms of what we want from them and our expectations of them. And that begins to color how we see them. That as I've done this with couples often, they report that they begin to see their spouse in terms of the roles that they take, the functions. When they look at them, they see them taking care of this, doing this, taking care of that, you know, functioning in different ways. And they lose, so they only see the role, they don't see the person anymore. And I think this is one of the things that often happens in a relationship, is that we end up dealing so much with the role and our expectations and our wants and needs from each other, and don't stop for that just moment of affirmation of saying, wow, here's a human being, and yeah, they're not all that I had hoped they might be, or some of my needs aren't getting met, but they're a beautiful creation, a gift to be lived with and worked with.
The word acceptance goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then to gain a sense of that in return, if that can, to believe that your spouse just loves you and accepts you for who you are. And sure, you're not meeting all their needs and you're not living up to all their expectations, but you know, that feeling of acceptance and love. And how then to, it's that level of basic acceptance of you, of me, and then that somehow the two of us are going to share life and work out who we are together in life, come hell or high water.
Knowing that they'll be both.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody once said, there's a teacher in the Portland area who teaches family life studies or something like that, and she talks about when you think about marrying somebody, start figuring out who you would want to take on an overland hike from Portland to Florida. Because it's, you know, you're going to encounter all kinds of difficulties. You know you can make it, you know, give them enough time and you're going to make it. But you're going to encounter all kinds of things on the way. Who would you want to be able to share that with? What kind of qualities, you know, are you going to want to deal with at that? You're going to have to depend on them in certain ways. Certainly a sense of humor is going to have to take you a long way. What are some of the qualities you look for to take that long hike from here to Florida? When you get those things down, then you might think of those same qualities in terms of marriage. And I think that not only gives you, you know, your qualities for a traveling companion, but sets in focus the idea of it is a long journey and there is a goal. It isn't just, you know, tomorrow and maybe next week and next year. And it isn't deciding each day, as Dale was mentioning, you know, am I going to be married? Shall I stay married? We have some friends who go to church occasionally. Every Sunday they decide whether or not they're going to go to church. You know, so if they're tired, they've been up late the night before, it's a decision all the time. Tremendous energy consumption. You know, our family, we're going to go to church. There's, you know, we made that decision once, and that's the way it is. So even there's grumbles from the kids, they've been up late the night before and so forth, they get up and go to church. It's not a hassle every Sunday morning. So when we see our friends in church on Sunday morning, we think, oh, good, today was the day they decided to come. But it is, every Sunday, it is a time consumption for them. And for people who are not looking at the long haul, expecting the hell and high water and the dry deserts, and with the sense that, hey, we're going someplace together. I think for Christians, we've got to, you know, hey, that's the focus. You know, we're talking about living you, me, us two, but us three in terms of a life with Christ as part of our life. And, you know, that's another whole quality that we've got as a real advantage for the people who run down to the JP and or down to the courthouse and get married, and without some sense of another entity being part of marriage.
Kind of parallel with that, you know, we can go through the depths, so we can go through shorter term or longer term arguments or whatever, but we know on the other side of that there may be there is getting back together, and it's within a framework that allows that to happen.
Yeah.
And I could see if each time you went through those depths, you had to consider that on the other side, that was the end of it. You would expend all that energy in agony, perhaps, going through it. It wasn't necessary.
Yeah, and we're talking about acceptance. You know, mm-hmm. how much, that person knows I'm not perfect. And that, you know, this sort of thing happens. But basically, if that person really believes that I love her and accept her, and I know she loves and accepts me, as you say, at the other end of this argument, we're going to be able to put these things back together again and move on.
One thing I feel is important to myself is seeking to develop habits of kindness, which can be, in other words, can be cultivated,
mm-hmm.
not to simply bare acceptance, but there has to be initiative and a part of either one of the partners or both in terms of those types of cultivations.
That's right.
Not only of caring for the other person, which is important in what I hear, but often in the way you care for the other person, you create the person that cares for you.
Something in that is there,
yeah. Yeah, that your caring has an effect on the other person. So often we're getting in some way, if we're not getting what we want from our spouse, we're getting in some way what we've asked for or created. And we're not all, you know, it's hard to be in touch with that.
I've got a problem that I think I can ask. I'll try.
And then I would be interested in your response in light of what you've been saying, which I've understood to be primarily the kind of interpersonal relationship that these two people are developing with each other, and they work on it. Statistically, if you look at it, 1,000 marriages that have ended in disillusion, you find that certain characteristics pop out at you. For example, those who do and don't terminate their marriage are apt to be separated by the ability of both spouses to have a decent life and earning power, education. Yeah, I think without doubt, the better educated each spouse is and the more capable each spouse is of being self-supporting, the higher the probability is that the marriage will terminate in dissolution. Freedom of movement. There is not a barrier in terms of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Or if one compares childless marriages with marriages of persons which is a second or third marriage, the similarity of a childless and a step marriage is markedly greater than the similarity between either of those to a marriage with children. childless marriages and step marriages come unglued with much fewer barriers, impediments, much easier to terminate that relationship. One can look at health. A study done where I live a little while ago, testing 300 cases that came before the family court, that's a counseling court, not a litigating court, found on the basis of five different sets of psychological tests like Satir and Holmes and so forth, that an amazingly high number, 80% of the cases, presented one spouse who was at the point of separation psychologically damaged enough so that he or she was at that time not capable of doing anything, really. Not a job, not keeping a house, you know, just whether, which is the cause and which is the effect, I don't know. Those seem to me to be primarily objective factors which are not dependent upon the attention that we pay to each other in our daily relationships, meeting needs and so forth. Those are the ones that pop out when you look at the literature. Maybe that's because we have no way of really measuring the sorts of things you've been talking about. Or
that's true.
Have I asked a question? What I'm saying is I wonder how to relate what we are saying to each other here, and I believe it, about the importance of working on the marriage, if I can shorthand it that way, with the data which one sees, which doesn't really illuminate that aspect of the relationship as much as it does he or she have the ability to move out and get a job and take care of himself or herself and so forth, those sort of objective criteria.
So, the data I hear you saying is that essentially when there's more freedom, that there's more divorce.
If I had to set up a profile at the time that a couple was married and predict, if I wanted to use factors which predicted whether or not that marriage would terminate in dissolution at a given period of time, the best, most powerful criteria that I can think of right now are criteria which do not depend upon the kind of relationship that, you know, the care that they take of each other, but depend upon education, child experience, health, and some other things. I don't know which is cause and which is effect. Some of those.
Right. To me, it's like, it's what I call the challenge of marriage, and I don't know what ability we're going to have to meet the challenge. But anyway, with the growing acceptance of divorce, the growing ability of women to move out and live independently, economically, the growing acceptance of children working out situations in divorce is just giving us a lot more permission and freedom to split. They just toughed it out. It's not that necessarily those marriages were good marriages. And now we're coming to face the issue of what does it mean to have a good marriage and what skills do we need in order to do that. Now the effect then of developing these skills, I think can have a positive effect on the factors. That given the freedom, I think more people are going to be able to make it because they're going to discover how they can make it. Whereas without the skills, they don't know how to make it. They just end up going like this when they try to work out the problems. They don't know how to talk to each other. They don't know how to negotiate. They don't know how to really be with each other and have a continuing growing relationship. And their parents haven't modeled these things because they didn't have to. So whether this is going to be an answer to that kind of threat, I don't know. And yet, I don't think the alternative is to go back to the point where we cut back our freedoms. And
maybe recognize the fact that the marriage today is subject to a lot more stress of the sorts, and therefore recognize that the importance of working at the kinds of interpersonal relationships you've been describing is almost there.
Yeah, and those people, you know, that we're speaking to, you know, really fall into the community, all of you,
fall into those categories that you're talking about, you know, where you're competent, educated people. You know, and those are the ones, as you mentioned, when we have all those kinds of options, where both people have skills and are can be independent, have a great deal of education, and so forth. So in a sense, hey, we need some of these skills to make working out the situation together more likely than to say, throw in the towel. You know, I can go out, I've got a good job, I'm making this much money a year. So I think it's, you know, those are people we're addressing.
Let's go on and model what we're talking about.
Oh yeah, how to have a fight. Okay. We're talking about some problem solving, some, how do you negotiate some of these things? We're talking about couples moving into any relationship now, and it's not just, we're using the term the marriage relationship, but you know, if two women or two men or man and a woman are going to be living together, there still is a lot of negotiating. Now, who's going to do what? And since we're not dependent on the role models in the same way that they were, you know, 4 years ago. So, I've got a problem, Dale. I don't know if it's my problem, but we're going to have these people over for dinner right after we get home, and that faucet still isn't fixed in the kitchen, in the bathroom, and I, you know, it ought to be fixed.
There's, you know, and the bathroom needs painting, and we really should get a new shower curtain. That one looks kind of bad. And there are a lot of things that need to be done.
I know, but that faucet is leaking, and we're losing a lot of hot water and a lot of money, you know, trying to save money in lots of ways, and the faucet is still leaking.
Yeah, it still is leaking.
I think you should fix it. It needs to be done.
Oh, I'm just not going to have time by Saturday to fix it.
I've asked you time and time again to fix that faucet. You know, the first time was at least a month ago, and we've been having that drip, drip, drip ever since. You know, we've got to take, you know, this is your house too. I'm not the only one that's got to take care of the house. You do too.
Well, so it drips a little. You know, I just won't have time to get everything done by Saturday. You know, it's church council on Wednesday night, choir on Saturday, or Friday, or Wednesday, Thursday. And we've got that party on Friday night. There's just not going to be time.
Yeah, but these people aren't coming till Saturday night. How much time does it take to fix a faucet?
Well, it takes more time than you probably think.
I think we're going to get that problem solved. What's the problem? Who's got the problem? Obviously, it doesn't bother Dale at all that the faucet is dripping. I've got a problem. And it would be, if I can tell him that I've got a problem that I want, would he fix the faucet? I didn't even ask him. You know, how many women go through life saying, dear, the light in the basement is out? Or men do the same thing, you know. Dinner isn't on the table.
Right! Dinner isn't on the table. I got in 1 minute before you did.
You know, with an assumption that then somebody is going to fill in and say, oh, you mean that you would like to have that taken care of? We have learned to say, right, the light is out, or you're right, the dinner isn't on the table. And so we have start to ask what it is that we want. Do you want me to change the light? Are we out of light bulbs? Do you want one of the kids to do it? What do you want? And or what do I want? When do we want it done? What kind of a time frame? What are you willing to do? Or what am I willing to do to assist you?
You know, I felt the way you came at me, that you were saying to me that the faucet was dripping, and you know, I felt like you were just nagging me. You were blaming me because it wasn't fixed, that I was a bad guy. and you wanted me to jump right away and run and do it. And I had the feeling also, since you talked about the curtain and the painting and the bathroom and other things.
You talked about
the curtain. I talked about it now,
oh, okay.
But you've talked about it before. And so when you mentioned the faucet, I thought of all the other things.
Good condition. This is all psychodrama. Play acting.
Go on.
Please don't. But anyway, when she comes at me with that way, with my feeling like it's an accusation, I think of all the other jobs I haven't gotten done, and I assume that she's also thinking of those, even though she doesn't say them.
The list.
Yeah, the list.
Oh, man.
Come on, there should be a few more echoes in this room.
So up go my defenses, and I don't hear that she's only saying faucet right now. I think, oh, she also means, you know, paint it and do all those other things. And so I just dig my heels in, and we could, you know, go on and have a real good fight about whether I have time and, you know, how hard I work and how hard she works, and we could go on and on. Okay, let's, the first thing then that I would like her to do is to own that she has a problem. Not that I have a problem. If the faucet's dripping, at this point it's not bothering me that much.
Gets the water bill a little bother.
All right. You know, maybe at some point I'll decide I have a problem. But owning the problem is so important. Because if you think something needs to be done, it's your problem. And when you can say, I have a problem with that, that sure helps. And secondly, to be clear, and you were quite clear this time, although I heard you wrong, but you didn't help me at that point to say, I'm only concerned with the faucet. To clarify what is the issue. And then to be clear what it is you want me to do, so that I know. The third step then is for me to say what I'm willing to do and not willing to do. And the fourth step is, since she had the problem and I'm responding to her at this point, is to thank me for responding to her.
Some of that sense of that courtesy.
Identify the problem, clarify the request, willingness to respond, and thank you. Let's do it again.
Okay. Right. Dale, that faucet in the bathroom, in the hall bathroom, is really bothering me, and I would appreciate if you would fix it, especially before we have company over next Saturday night.
I can see how that's really bugging you, because you've mentioned it a number of times.
Yeah.
And I know that I haven't gotten it fixed yet.
I know you're busy, but it really does bother me. And I'll fix, change a light bulb. I'll fix a wiring, but I don't know how to handle the plumbing.
Yeah. Now, you know, there are those other things that need to be done, too.
Well, that's the one thing that really is bugging me now. And that's the one thing I want done.
And so you'd like to have me get that done by Saturday?
Yeah, if you would, please.
Well, I have a problem, because I do have, you know, the church council meeting Wednesday night and choir Thursday and the party on Friday night. So I'm having difficulty. We don't have any washers.
Well, if that's a question, I'll be glad to get the washers. If you'll tell me what kind to get.
You'd be willing to pick them up.
I'll pick them up. You just
okay,
tell me what to get.
I don't see when I would have time to do that. I'm willing to change, you know, but I wouldn't have time to get the washers.
Yeah, if that's all it takes, I'll get the washers and we'll have them on Saturday.
I'll get it done Saturday morning.
Good. Good. Thanks for hearing what it is that I want.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And you will probably get it done.
Okay, there's a lot of traps. You see them? Where you can go scooting off in different directions. And not work through what it is you want to have happen. How does this fit what you see happening?
Right on.
Yeah. Lack of association.
The last 36 years has been a real problem.
You don't have your faucets fixed yet, Vern.
You don't have to use your bathroom anymore.
What I'm sensitive to on that one is
sort of the hesitance to say, Jane, will you do this? Because I feel like, well, maybe I'll do it myself.
Yeah, so you're not willing to sort out what you're willing to do and not do, some sense of guilt.
Sometimes when she thinks that, well, after all, burn the washing dishes once in a while, maybe she thinks that if she says the faucet is dripping, I might hand her a wrench. And if you come all square and right up front on top of the table, I think it's a magnificent technique. Vern, will you fix the faucet? The answer probably will be yes.
Yeah, but I've been busy several nights and I don't have the washers, you know, sort of thing is realistic. That's what people are doing. You do it in business all the time. You have to negotiate. You have to clarify the problem. What is the problem? And, you know, and then what do you want done about it? And make sure the other person has really, I don't want them to fix all the plumbing. You know, maybe we need to replace the whole sink system. But right now I just want the one washer replaced, or two.
My wife knows that I once took a Cuter aptitude test and got -9 off the chart on the mechanical aptitude. So anything that is fixed is a real victory.
I agree that the negotiating aspect, and this is, you know, I would say the same thing that Vern did, you know, it's very real. In business, one has time, one is paid great sums of hourly money. We're talking about attorneys, I worked as a consultant. I mean, these are big bucks. So you negotiate, you take the time, you go to lunch, you do all the little nuances. Then you come home tired, and the time is what I find really critical. You know, that little practical aspect of when you move from the faucet, there's, you know, all these other things on the list, which was mentioned. And it takes a great deal of time, doesn't it? I mean, one has to then say it's worth the time.
Yeah.
We're not going to watch TV tonight. We're not going to read a book or look at a folder from Holden Village. Sit and do this negotiating?
My hunch is that if we hadn't gone through some of the steps we did when we negotiated, that we would have spent a lot more time dealing with this issue and a lot more energy dealing with the feelings around it.
That's good. Because the feelings would still be...
So I think with negotiating skills, we actually end up saving time because we can cut through a lot of the junk that we get into and it sidetracks. Now, one important part of what we did is what we call shared understanding. That first, Ricky identified the problem, and then I made sure that I understood what she was saying. Do you mean that you only want the faucet fixed by this Saturday? Yes, that's what I mean. That's the problem that I'm concerned with at this point, not all these other things. And the ability to feedback and check out that I'm hearing what she's saying is so important. And it becomes increasingly important in marriage because increasingly we begin to assume that we know what our partner means. So they say something and we say, oh, I know what that means. And we act on it, and if we'd stop and check it out, we'll probably find out that that often isn't exactly what was meant. But we don't do that kind of checking out. Sometimes called active listening or empathetic listening or shared meaning.
We call it putting the bologna on the table.
So I can slice it.
Very graphic, yeah. Good.
Right.
Something a little subtle at the very front end of this example, although I think maybe in a lot of cases it may be true. Part of your message really was, I'm going to be embarrassed if we have company over Saturday and it is not fixed. And that was a need you had underneath this. It's bugging me.
I wanted the house in good shape when the company
came.
Yeah.
And there's a motivator in there that brought this out.
Yeah, and part of that is that I know that that's also a motivator for Dale. You know, so that's part of what, you know, that's an assumption. But you're right. There is
what's really behind.
Yeah.
What's really behind.
In this example, everything worked out, but how do you deal with it then when one party isn't willing to give? And, you know, the escalation goes up or the hurt feelings come in.
Then it takes looking for what one is willing to do and not willing to do, and might be some creative working out.
Mm-hmm.
but at least it's clear where the boundaries are, rather than getting all muddy.
Mm-hmm. On this issue, if Dale said, I've got, you know, this plus I've got all this schedule next Saturday, I cannot get that done. Then
you have to reevaluate.
Then I may say, I'm going to call a plumber because that's really been bothering me. That's important enough to me. Mm-hmm. And then we figure out, he may figure out the rates for the plumber and decide that, you know, time and energy might be better instead of doing something else. But we've gone through that. He was going to remodel the basement so our boys would have three bedrooms downstairs. And after framing in the closet, you know, 3 months later, I said, how long do you expect this is going to take you? Well, I'm going to work at it. I know how to do this. But he didn't have time. And I said, I'm going to call somebody that I know that does this, a contractor that'll do it, and find out what he'll charge. And he did it. He came in and gave me a price which was so reasonable. And it was more reasonable. When he got finished, we were able to get a new construction rate for the drywall, which more than made up the difference for the carpenter than if we had somebody come in and remodel construction.
Isn't there some danger in that you're giving him an ultimatum?
No, not. I mean, and I'm not saying, hey, if you don't do this, I'm going to call a plumber. But it's a matter of, he can't do it, then I'm going to, you know, he's not willing to do that. And say, well, part of it is, I really feel badly about it. I think I would like to call a plumber.
That's not close to an ultimatum.
Or does it start putting him down in any way?
Depends on how you say it.
Yeah, part of it depends upon if I'm using it as a club, you know, you do this or I'm going to call it.
If she says, I can understand that you are just swamped right now and don't have time, yet it's very important to me that we get this job done. And so the only alternative I see is maybe to call a plumber. Then I say, oh, you know, you let me off the hook. You understand my problem in that sense. And I may say, no, let's not call a plumber. I've got a friend I can get to come in and do it. Yeah.
I don't think it becomes an ultimatum as long as she's still attacking the problem and not attacking him. As mm-hmm. long as she sticks to the fact that we're talking about a dripping faucet and not the fact that he just hasn't taken the time to fix it along with all these other things that really need to play or just whatever. As long as he's sticking with the problem and not the person.
I'd like to ask something we put earlier and talked about having more freedom now in our society than we did, say, you know, 40 years ago. But what might we also say, is there more, because of more exposure in terms of media, that we have more exposure to coarseness that's also either maybe unconsciously affecting how we make relationships?
How do you see that we're having more exposure to coarseness?
Well, because if maybe some of the models that we have in various ways, we have more, perhaps the family had more time or attention to their own relationships, whereas in the more public media where we have play acting, these other kinds of models that may be less than what we have in our home are things that are influencing perhaps unconsciously how we react when we have a specific situation where it's really calling us in real life to make the response. And if a failure is made, it might be because we have unconsciously aped an attitude that's been brought in, which we're not expressing our true one.
Something we're trying on for size.
Okay. Okay. Now, so I believe that we're having more of an emphasis on assertiveness nowadays.
Yeah.
And that, some ways, can be depicted as coarseness or used in a uncaring way. However, some of what may be happening is that in the past we had a lot of emphasis on compliance, on not raising issues, not dealing with feelings or issues, often in a very direct way. So that often the tension went underground, the feelings were hidden, and a lot of the fighting it out was in an underground way, subtle way. Whereas the self-assertive, having a good argument, may seem more abrasive to some who came out of that orientation of the past, but may be a lot healthier. I can remember a movie I saw. I never saw my parents argue, never once really raised their voice with each other. And so when I saw a movie that showed a couple just slamming things and shouting at each other, and what's going on here, you know, really arguing, and I thought, awful. And then they showed another couple, the same couple actually, having another argument, only they did it in a different way. And they did it by logic and very cool and collected and not very cool, very controlled is the term I mean. And then they analyzed the two arguments. And where they did it in a very controlled way, they ended up with a lot of resentment, and they ended up with a lot of distance and withdrawnness. And the two that had really argued it out ended up kind of working it through, getting the feelings out, and feeling close to each other. And I began to see a whole new possibility for a way of dealing with issues than I had known in growing up, that the noise wasn't necessarily bad. So I think we can learn how to let some of the feeling out. And the key issue there was that they dealt with the issue, and they didn't hit below the belt. They didn't start tearing each other apart in the healthy fight. And that, I think, is what you're getting at, is the quality is the caring. Whether you can have a good fight and still be caring. And that's what I believe you can do. Well, we didn't get to intimacy. That's another area that I think people are exploring, and I think we're finding that intimacy is very different than sexuality, because many are able to have sexual experiences and not feel close and not feel really in touch with each other. And so we're beginning to discover that that sexuality or sexual activity doesn't assume or necessitate the involvement of intimacy, and that is another kind of quality of really being in touch with each other and really caring for each other.